Welcome back to the second hour of Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name's David Inge. Glad to have you with us. The producers, Harriet Williamson, Martha Deal, and Jason Croft is at the controls this morning. In this hour of the show, we will be talking about Iraq's first independent women's radio station. It's called Radio Al-Mahaba, and that is the Arabic word for love. It's based in Baghdad and has been on the air since the spring of 2005, doing programming essentially by and for women. And we're very pleased to have here on the program with us one of the founders of the station, Bushra Jamil. She's here visiting the campus of the university. She'll be taking place in a panel discussion talking about Radio Al-Mahaba. That'll be tonight at 7 at the Levis Faculty Center. This is jointly sponsored by the College of Communications, the Department of Journalism, and the Center for Global Studies. And I am certain that anyone who is interested in attending should feel welcome to stop by. Again, that's on the third floor of the Levis Center tonight at 7 o'clock. And, of course, for everybody else, if you couldn't attend, if you have questions or you'd like to call in here this morning and talk with our guest, you certainly can do that. Here in Champaign-Urbana, the number is 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line that's good anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. Again, in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, and toll-free 800-222-9455. Well, thank you very much for being here. Pleased that you can be here.
Thank you. Thank you for having
you
me
were,
here.
You were born in Baghdad?
I was born, raised in Baghdad. I finished my education. I got married. I had a family. And I lived the two wars, the Iraq-Iran war and the Gulf War, all in Iraq before I left in 93.
In 93. And then you moved to Canada. And so you lived for a number of years in Vancouver.
Yeah, right? I lived in Vancouver for 10 years before 2003. And 2003 in May, I went back to Iraq.
Well, first, can you talk a little bit about your decision to leave Iraq in 93?
Actually, that was after, you know, after the Gulf War. I don't know how much people really are aware of what happened in the Gulf War. But during the Gulf War, we were very happy. We were pleased that at last we're going to get rid of Saddam. And people were thrilled. They wrote Welcome USA on their rooftops. And they were all ready. Once the troops will enter Baghdad, they would come out and help them to get rid of Saddam. But after the withdrawal of the troops and after the vicious killing and that happened by Saddam and his people, we all felt disappointed and we felt unsafe. We were never safe again. And, of course, some people like us who were educated and considered somehow the elite of the society, we couldn't stay quiet. We couldn't keep quiet. We were voicing our opinion and we were saying enough is enough. So at one point we knew that my husband, myself, and even the people around us that it was about time to leave because our lives were in danger. So we made up the decisions. And we left at that time with my two children, and we ended up in Canada.
Mm-hmm. And then can you talk about why it was that you decided then after now the second time around that you wanted to go back?
Because we never lost hope. And I always wanted to go back to Iraq. And as long as Saddam was in power, I knew I would not be able to go back. So when after 2003 and after the fall of Saddam regime, we had this, you know, big hope that, okay, now things will work out. And it's better for us Iraqis to go back and help the Americans and help all the good people to put things together. So this is why I decided to go back.
Mm-hmm. And you now have done a number of different things since you've been back. What are some of the things that you have been involved in? Aside from the radio station and sort of the other thing.
Yeah, I went back and worked with the civil society institutions. I worked on the training of and rehabilitation of the education system in Iraq for a while as a master trainer. I also worked with the Iraq Reconstruction and Development Council, which was basically part of the CPA. And as an advisor for women issues and the city halls. During my work, of course, I met with Iraqis every day. I dealt with Iraqis and Americans every day. I was more or less the connection between Iraqis and the Americans. And slowly I started to see that unless Iraqis themselves voice their opinion and they tell clearly and loudly what they want, things won't happen because unfortunately, the political parties who got in under the wings of Americans and who are in power, who assumed power, they have no interest in people's lives. They have no interest in really building the country. They have no loyalty to Iraq itself.
Mm-hmm. And you were, just to make sure people understand, and your involvement with education and educational issues was be a natural one, because before you left Iraq in 1993, you had been a teacher.
I was a teacher for 9 years, actually. And at one point, there was this law, unless you become a Baathist or part of the Ba'ath Party, you cannot be in the education system, because the education system was simply closed at that time, which means everybody has to be a Baathist. So I had no choice. I mean, they gave me the choice either to become a Baathist or change my job. So I resigned. I resigned my job. I went back to school. I finished my master's in sciences. And I worked for a while with the United Nations as a teacher. Then after that, I decided to leave the country. Mm-hmm.
So you couldn't have, I'm sure that there were people who, because you to have any sort of advancement at all, you had to be a member of the party. And I'm sure that there were people who didn't support the party, who didn't support Saddam Hussein, but who said to themselves, well, I essentially have no choice here. What I'm gonna go along to get along, and I'm just gonna go ahead and say yes, do whatever. So that was something that you just couldn't bring yourself to do.
Definitely, but I have to say I was lucky, because we had another income at the time, my husband also, so I had the chance, the opportunity, and the privilege to say no. As you mentioned, some people they couldn't. Either they were too weak, too scared, or they didn't have many options. So they had to sign and became Baathist. And they are now persecuted for that.
Mm-hmm. How did the radio station get started? I've read a little bit of this story about how it got started, but tell the story about how Radio Al-Mahaba came to be.
Before I mention how the radio came to be, I have mm-hmm. to talk a little bit about the organization behind that radio. Opportunity for Kids International is an organization that was established at the beginning of the 90s, 92, by an Iraqi-American who originally went to America, was a refugee, and who fled Saddam's regime. And he started it with also other American citizens there who wanted to help Iraqis, especially Iraqi children. So it was established in 1992, and they worked ever since in the northern part of Iraq, because it was under the protection of the Americans. Mm-hmm. And they kept working until 2003. After that, they opened their office in Baghdad. And they thought, they started working. At the time, I was working with a group of women activists lobbying for women rights. So I met them. I met the head of the organization in Baghdad. And we started talking about ways, how can we empower women? How can we support them? How can we encourage them to stand up? And we thought with the high illiteracy rate in Iraq, and also all the oppression they have been through, all the atrocities, the best way is to talk to them. And since most of, a lot of Iraqi women, especially those who live in the rural areas, are unable to leave their villages, it was very hard for people to go there and talk to them. And they can't read and write. So the best way is to have radios through a radio program so they can tune in and listen to us. This is how the idea came. At the time, I was working actually with the United Nations. And they submitted the proposal. I encouraged them, and they got the fund. It's one-time seed fund, and they started the station. It was the first time broadcasting started was April 1st, 2005.
Mm-hmm. And has been going now, although I understand that at one point you had a little problem because your transmitter was at the Baghdad Hotel and the building was bombed, so you were knocked off the air. Then you got a substitute transmitter, and then that went out on you. And now just recently, a very large broadcasting company, the Harris folks, who build, among other things, who build transmitters, have now given you a transmitter so that you... Are you on the air now, or are you still waiting for that for the new transmitter?
No, actually, we are. We got the good news the day I arrived to the States. And I got a phone call... I got an email saying that the transmitter is on, and they got phone calls from people outside Baghdad telling them they can hear us clearly. So the transmitter is up and running right now.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me again introduce our guest. We're talking this morning with Bushra Jamil. She is one of the founders of Radio Al-Mahaba. It is an independent women's radio station. It's in Baghdad, the country's first independent women's radio station, largely run by women. There are some men apparently who work there, but largely run by women. And really the focus of programming is women, Iraqi women and their lives. There are different kinds of programming. They do news. They do music. They also do call-in shows. And that's an opportunity for women to actually talk about what their lives are about and ask questions and raise their concerns. And as our guest has said, they've been on the air now since the spring of 2005, made possible, I think, in large part by funding from the United Nations, I think, initially, right?
Yeah, initially, but that was a seed fund just for the establishment of the station. After that, we had to raise the fund ourselves through either projects with certain international agencies or through advertisement and commercials. But after the transmitter was destroyed in October, we lost that source of income. And we were hoping that once we get the new transmitter, we will get back on track with the funding. Also, the generous donations that we received, especially from the States, helped us a lot as the operation to operate the station, to pay for all the expenses, plus the donations from Iraqis who are who believe in the cause and who want to help. But now, I don't know how much of advertisement we can do with all the businesses closing down because of the security situation. Mm.
So you really do depend on selling some advertising, some on-air advertising to keep the station going.
Yeah, for the time being. But we very much like to become a public radio station. So far, the government is not interested in helping us because we don't speak the same language. We talk about democracy. We talk about freedom. We talk about human rights. And we talk about the necessity of the involvement of Iraqi people in the decision making. And to them, these are things they don't want to work with.
Yeah, and the station is not affiliated with any political party. It's not affiliated particularly with any religious faction. It's not what you have tried to do, from what I understand, is to try to, as much as you possibly can, maintain your independence and not have ties to any kind of groups like that.
Definitely. And this is, it's totally independent, secular radio station. I would say it's the only women, independent women, secular radio station, not only in Iraq, but in the whole region. And this is why our dream and our plans is to go beyond Iraq, is to broadcast in Farsi and go to let Iranian women listen to us and hear us. Mm-hmm. And also Syria, Saudis, all the neighboring countries. To us, it is a fight. The neighboring countries are influencing Iraqi women and the Iraqi lives a lot. The west side of Baghdad now, a woman cannot drive a car. A woman was pulled out of her car. The car was burned in the middle of the street to give other women lessons, a lesson not to drive a car. It's obvious. This is the Saudi, the Wahhabi influence in Iraq. Mm-hmm. Ministries, the new ministers, even the previous ministers, all ministries, the employees, the female employees must wear scarf. Even Christian employees, they have to wear scarf.
The headscarf.
Mm-hmm. They have to cover their heads, otherwise they don't get to keep the jobs. So we are thinking, okay, you want to influence our lives the way you want. Okay, it's a fight, but we are going to do it by words, with words. Mm-hmm. The word, because we believe, the word of democracy, the word of justice, the word of self-respect. This will, after all, this will win. These words will go everywhere, and women in other countries, not only in Iraq, will all come together, gather together, and become a power.
Obviously, here we believe in the power of the talk show, of people being able to call in and ask questions and make statements and, you know, talk about whatever is on their mind or whatever we happen to be talking about at that point. And I'm really interested in having you talk about those kind of programs that you do, because you do those kinds of call-in shows where women call in and talk about all kinds of things. That they talk about what they want. They talk about how they're treated by their husbands. They talk about how they're treated within society. All, I'm sure, very volatile, potentially volatile topics. Talk about what it about these kind of programs and what it is that women call in and say when you do these shows.
Well, it depends on the show itself. For example, the talk shows, mainly people would just call and say what they want. And this is the good thing. One of the good positive things that happened in Iraq after 2003, people are still able to voice their opinion. People are still able to say what they want. Yes, some of them could be persecuted or even lose their lives, but because death has become one of the daily details, people don't care anymore. They know death could be at any corner, so they just speak up their minds. I'll give you an example. In one program called It's Better Walking with You, the program has three parts. The first part is a subject, the subject of the day, and usually it's about something we pick from everyday life of people, like lack of electricity, lack of services, lack of medications, the bad situation of hospital, the medical system, whatever they want to talk about. And also we, of course, touch on the positive sides of this society whenever something positive happens. The other part, the second part, would be a proverb that we, from our culture, the Iraqi culture, would say the proverb and ask the person to comment. The third part is a participation. The caller would, if he wants to say a word, if he wants to read a poem or even sing a song, it's up to them. So one of the callers, the proverb was very similar to it here in the American culture when you say you made your bed and you lay mm-hmm. in it. So the caller said, well, this is matches Iraqis, all Iraqis. And we said, how come? And he said, well, we elected this government. We have to deal with it. So you see, Iraqis, they are still, and they are aware. Politically, they are aware of what is going on. But the problem, they don't have the right leadership. They are very disappointed with all the political parties who are in power, whether they are Sunnis, Shias, Kurds, you name it. They were and they are a big disappointment for Iraqi people. Mm-hmm. So we give this opportunity for Iraqis to call in and to say what they feel and what they think and what even their suggestions for, you know, how to improve the situation. From all these calls, I can tell you the number one concern of Iraqis is employment. They all say, if we have jobs, if there are enough jobs on the ground for Iraqi people, none of this would happen. The security situation would improve directly. And the second worry for them is the extreme injustice that is happening from the Iraqi government, that really put by the Iraqi government on the people.
We are close to our midpoint of this hour, and I would like to again introduce our guest, Bushra Jamil. She is here visiting the campus of the University of Illinois talking about this radio station, Radio Al-Mahaba, Iraq's first independent women's radio station. She was one of the founders and continues to be involved in it. Got off the ground with the help of some money from the United Nations. They've also gotten donations from, I know, people in the United States. They did manage to support themselves also from some advertising, although, as she explained, that's getting more difficult because of the economic climate in Iraq. They lost their first transmitter when it was hit by a bomb. It was in the Baghdad Hotel. They got another temporary one just recently. Now they got a new one. And they continue to do programming largely by and for women. They're not affiliated with any political party. They feel very strongly about their independence. And she's here. And we'll take part in a panel discussion about Iraqi women's radio. I do want to mention that again, too. That's on the U of I campus tonight at 7 o'clock at the Levis Faculty Center on the third floor. It's free. Anybody who wants to attend certainly should feel welcome. It's sponsored by the College of Communications, Department of Journalism, the Center for Global Studies. And here on the program, questions are welcome. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. I understand that various groups have, in fact, approached you and said they would be willing to give you money if you would take whatever their particular line was. So obviously, people think, well, this is a resource. This would be a voice for us if we could get our viewpoint on there. And so far, you said no. You turned down all those offers. Say no, we're not going to do that.
Yeah, and we make it clear at all time. We are willing to take donations, but our policy will never change. We are neutral. We are secular. We will never change the message, no matter how hard it is. We have some good Iraqis who keep their jobs just to share, to donate money for us. And I know that for a fact. Some of the hard things that we faced with, for example, we tried to get some funding from the American embassy and the American contractors on the ground in Iraq. Except for one contractor that was willing to help us a little bit, nobody was really interested. And that was the biggest disappointment, because we think if we are secular, we share the same views with the Americans. We talk about democracy. We talk about human rights. We respect human rights, and we want to build a healthy, secular society, then why are we not supported? I still have no answer for that. Hmm. I asked them many times.
No, I mentioned the fact that you had lost the transmitter, then you got a substitute, and now you got this new one from Harris. And now Harris, they're the company that got the contract to rebuild Iraqi radio and TV.
Yeah.
And so how did it come about that they gave you a brand new state of the art top line 5K transmitter? How did that happen?
That happened because we have very good friends and people who believed in us and still believe in us here in the States. We have friends in Salt Lake City. Deborah McAdams heard about us, and she, through connections, she could reach Harris Corporation, and Harris Corporation, Deborah Hattington and Rich Redmond, they were both they were willing to donate the transmitter to us. So what I'm saying here, we're getting more help from within the States, but not from Iraq, not on the ground where people, Americans, are actually there and they can see us and they know us, but they are not willing to help as much. We watch money pouring and going to fanatics, to radio stations that talks actually, in a way, against Americans. And they get the fund in the name of democracy. While we there, we talk the talk, and we are willing to go beyond that. And we are putting our lives in danger, and we don't get as much help.
Hmm. How dangerous is it, being involved in the station and saying the things that you do, putting on the kind of programming that you do?
It is very dangerous. It is risky. So far, I would say we were lucky that the government has other things to deal with. So probably they are keep us at the back of their mind so far. But we are aware, and we know at one point things will get harder. We don't have enough guards to start with because we can't afford hiring guards. And one of our guards was kidnapped, tortured, and was threatened not to work with us anymore. But he came back anyway, once he recovers, he will be back on the job. The secret of our success is the team that we have. We have a group of young Iraqis who believe that the change will happen, who never lose hope, and who want to see a better tomorrow, that in Iraq. This belief is pushing us day to day to continue to do what we want to do.
I understand that with the new transmitter, that your coverage area is now maybe about half of the country.
Almost
half of the country. That's a big chunk of territory. So I would think that you can't fly below the radar, as we say. You know, you're going to be noticed. I'm sure that they know what you were doing before. They know what you're doing now. It's not like you can hide. It's very obvious that you're on. The programming is there, and what you're doing is very obvious. So.
Not only that, we are going to change. We have the plans already in place to change even the type of the programs that we have. As we are going to add or change some programs to fit with the villages and the mentality, the way of thinking, the language even, easier language. So women in those areas can easily, connect with us and understand what we're talking about. Hmm. We also have 2 hours of English, broadcast in English language. We have another 2 hours that we broadcast in Kurdish language. We want to add another hour broadcast in the Assyrian, which is the Christian language.
And I think that if people would want to listen, that through the website of this organization you talked about, Opportunities for Kids International, did I read it right that you can actually listen on that website? You can listen to Radio Al-Mahabi?
No, actually, we can't. We are not on the web yet.
Oh, okay.
But we will be. So we're working on that. But you can listen to some programs, but not live, not directly, not every day. But we have some examples.
So if you'd like to, so if somebody would like to perhaps get something of an idea about what the programming is like.
They can go to OKR. They can go to the website and look at the website. But now the website of the station, Al-Mahabi Radio Station, is under construction. So hopefully we manage to come up with enough money and it will be up and running soon.
Yeah, all right, very good. We have someone here who would like to join us, someone on a cell phone. They're here in Champaign, Champaign-Urbana, where we are, line number one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I admire the guest very much and what she's doing and trying to do in her country.
Thank you.
I think I would be very much interested in knowing how her husband feels about this important work.
Actually, my husband is in Canada. He is taking care of our son. And, you know, to me, I have to say my family tried to stop me. But I said, you know, I did my job with you. Now you guys are all grown-ups and you can take care of yourselves. But now it's the turn of all other Iraqis. My brothers and sisters back there are still waiting for me. And they know very well I'm extremely determined, and I never kept it as a secret. From day one we went to Canada, I always said, I'll be back to Iraq whenever I can.
Thank you very much.
All right, thanks for the call. Others are welcome. 333-9455. Toll free, 800-222-9455. Do you think that you'll be there for the foreseeable, for years? For mm-hmm. what? I mean, how do you think about the future, say, you know, 5-10 years in the future? Would you still see yourself still being there and still doing this kind of thing?
Definitely. Or maybe I'll be doing something else, but once the radio station is strong and independent and they can get enough money, and this is exactly what we have in mind. Once it is a public radio station where we have a government that will be willing to support it, probably I'll go for something else. There is a lot to do on the ground in Iraq. Everything is needed. The amount of destruction that happened during Saddam time and then from 2003 until now, it's immense. We need all the hard work. We need all the effort to fix it. But it is fixable. It's not impossible at all. Mm. It is hard, but it's doable. And I believe in that. A lot of Iraqis believe in that. And it won't take 5 or 10 years. It will take less.
You know, here in the United States, there is a very heated debate going on among people about so many things having to do with Iraq. But starting with the very basic question of whether or not the United States should have gone into Iraq and toppled Saddam Hussein at all, whether we should have gone in the first place at all. And people, honestly, I think, asking themselves the question, are the people of Iraq better off because of what we have done, or at least the way things are today, have somehow we actually made life for Iraqi people worse because of what we did?
Well, this question has like many layers. If I want to answer, I have to take them one by one.
Sure.
First of all, Iraqis' lives were not any better before 2003. The killing was there, but it was all done behind the walls. The oppression was there. The lack of services was there. But it was only done, though the only difference was done by one person and one regime. Now it's done by several people and several movements. On the other side, as I mentioned, the Iraqis now have hope that Saddam, at one point, nobody believed he would be gone, is gone. Then they are thinking, okay, same way, these people can also be removed, the bad people. It's nothing impossible. So deep inside, they have this hope. They know it is doable. We have, this morning I was talking to the station, and they told me, a woman called, and she was talking about the prime minister. And she said, what does he think? Who is he fooling? He can't fool us. If he thinks that no men are left in the country to fight, we are still here. We can go out and fight. The woman and another caller called to support her. So the drive, the hope is there because they have seen, no matter what Saddam did, how brutal he was, he ended up in a cage, in a court, treated as a criminal. Now, the mistake was, we believe, that the Americans came to Iraq without a plan. They came to topple Saddam. Unfortunately, they believed whoever told them that people would receive them with flowers. It's not, people would have received them with joy and flowers in 91, not now. And this was a simple fact. I don't know how could they believe all these advisors and people who came with them. But now, if you look at the whole picture, you understand. Actually, those advisors, Iraqi advisors, so-called advisors, who came with the Americans, actually they were giving the advices that will open the door for them and their political parties to be in power. They never advised for the Iraqi well-being. They advised for their own well-being. And we can see this smuggling of the oil and the lack and deteriorating state of services in Iraq and everything else, and death squads and you name it. All these bad things are related and connected directly, in Iraqi knows, with people in power. The other thing people that can't really understand, Iraqis, when they look at it, okay, the American administration came to Iraq as a part of fighting terrorism. We know very well that the worst terrorists now in the world are basically from the fundamentalist Islamists. So if this is the case, how come an Islamist fanatic government is in place? People can't understand. Okay, you guys came here to fight terrorists and terrorism, but you brought people who can, who are related one way or another to terrorism. So what's the point? Mm-hmm. There are good people on the ground in Iraq. There are very qualified elites that would be able to run the country and, you know, just change this whole thing 180 degrees. But they were never given the chance. They were never listened to.
I think that there are a lot of people now here in the United States who would, well, first of all, I'd say, well, there's no going back, so we can't change the decision to go. We know that in the time right after the invasion, many mistakes were made. There was poor planning. It was just terrible. And there was a terrible mess. So I think now for a lot of people, really the question is, for us here in the United States, is okay, now what do we do? You know, and there are people who say we need to stay and see if we can fix things. There are people who say we should just leave and let the people of Iraq figure out what they want to do. I suppose those are sort of the two extremes, and then you can be any place in between. And I think now that's the question we're, as a country, we're trying to figure out, okay, you know, what do we do now? What do you think, then? I realize you're speaking for yourself, but to the extent that you can also talk about what you think Iraqis think, what do you think the people of Iraq at this point would like the United States to do?
People in Iraq, and this is, I'm saying this and I'm responsible for what I'm saying because I talk to people all the time, whether through the radio stations, through, you know, other venues. People in Iraq would love to see the United States to bring more troops, take full control of the country, kick out all the bad ones, bad politicians, bad people. They speak about elections. We all know the elections were rigged one way or another. Well, people made a mistake. They elected the wrong guys. But according to the Security Council resolution, U.S. is an occupation forces. They are responsible for the well-being of Iraqi people, according to the resolution 1542. I believe the one that gave this status to the U.S. presence. As an occupation forces, they are trying, I have to tell you. You probably people do not know how many times the military, the army, American army would go and search places and search areas and save people who are taken hostages or who've been tortured by militias or kidnapped. They do it, but they do it only on a low scale, on a low profile, because they don't want to interfere with the government. They are trying to give the government enough space to prove themselves. It's not going to work. This government is not the right government. This government is not working for the well-being of the Iraqis. And we can see it happening every day. Last night, we were in Chicago, and a friend, my dear friend Akko, she lost her wallet. Actually, it was stolen from her. And a police officer came. And I was amazed to the amount of, you know, work he put in this whole thing. And he was so polite. He was a gentleman. And this morning I was watching a videotape that was sent to me, an ambulance car. The police in Baghdad tried to stop it. And apparently the driver, it's an ambulance. He doesn't have to stop. So they stop him. They pulled the driver out and they beat him so badly. He was lying on the floor, on the ground. So this is just one little example, I tell you. This is happening when the troops are there. Can you imagine what will happen if the troops pull out? People like me will be slaughtered. Iraqis, good Iraqis, the last hope for Iraq, will be slaughtered by Iran, Saudis, Kuwaitis, and bad Iraqis inside Iraq.
We have a caller, and again, maybe just very quickly, I'd like to introduce reintroduce our guest, Bushra Jamil. She's one of the founders of Radio Al-Mahaba. That's Iraq's first independent women's radio station. It is non-sectarian. It is politically independent. Has been on the air since the spring of 2005, doing programming mostly for, by, and for women. She herself was born in Baghdad, grew up there, left in 1993 because she explained that she just couldn't live there under the Saddam government. And then, after Saddam was gone, decided that she really wanted to go back and be involved in the rebuilding of the country, and was involved in some of the civil society organizations there, did some work with Iraq's Ministry of Education. She had been a teacher before. And also, she's been involved in this project ever since it started, of this radio station. She's here visiting the United States. She was you were just in Iraq, how recently? Just yesterday? A couple of days ago?
No, actually, I arrived from Iraq exactly on the 22nd. On the way, I went to see my son, because every time I go and see my son, because I don't know when will I see him again or if I ever will see him again.
And she after leaving Iraq in 1993, then she went and lived for 10 years in Canada,
yeah.
Right, in Vancouver, in BC. So she's been here on this side of the water for a couple of weeks. And we'll be participating in a panel discussion talking about Iraqi women's radio on the U of I campus tonight, 7 o'clock at the Levis Faculty Center. So if you'd like to stop in, you can do that. We have 3-4 minutes left. We have a caller here in Urbana. I do want to include them. Line one. Hello.
Hello. Yes. I believe the war in toppling Saddam, the war was a mistake because the large number of civilian deaths that were incurred in the United States' initial invasion. So my question is two parts. One, how many civilians do you believe were killed in the initial attack to topple Saddam? And secondly, did this enormous number of civilian casualties breed a lot of terrorists, simply because the natural human reaction is if somebody comes and kills your loved ones, then you're going to want to take revenge. So two-part question. How many civilians were killed, and did it breed more terrorists because of the civilian deaths?
All right.
Okay. Actually, this is, first of all, not too many civilians were killed. During the bombing, basically, the Americans bombed only the very the buildings that belonged to the Ba'athist parties, the military camps. They didn't really bomb civilian areas. And even during the invasion, I have to tell you something that many people do not know. The Iraqi army have decided not to fight. They surrendered. And they thought by surrendering, they would give the message, send the message to the American troops that we are on your side. So don't fear us. We are with you. Now, what really bred the terrorism is the dissolve of the army, the dissolvement of the army. Because once they dissolved the army, following the advice of the so-called Iraqi politicians, these officers were so angry, they said, we sent the message, we didn't fight, we said we are to your side. Why are you doing this to us? We can be of a great help. We can secure the country, which is true. If the oath only the army was still exist or is still exist in Iraq, a lot of this would not happen. A lot of this killing would not be happen. So that was the mistake that happened or that was done. And I'm sure it was not intentional. It was following the advice of Iraqi advisors. So what really breed terrorists and terrorism was the decisions that were made at that time, not the killing, not the death of civilians.
And the other part of the other question is, you think though that any time somebody is killed, that their family members are going to decide, well, we've got to avenge this death, and that what you get there is you get this cycle that's never going to end if it keeps going on like that.
Actually, again, Iraqis were so used to death and are so used to death, they don't think this way. But who really thinks this way is the militias. The militia, whether they're Sunnis or Shia, they take advantage of any death and they turn it into a vengeance and a revenge. It's just an excuse to go and get more, kill more people from the other side. And if you look at the city of Baghdad, unfortunately, I have to tell you now, the East City of Baghdad, and this is something I talked about earlier and I warned about, the East City of Baghdad is turning into a Shia stronghold. Look at the East City of Baghdad, the east part, of Baghdad, and you see the two main roads that go to Iran, that connect Iran to Iraq, they go through the east side of Baghdad, which tells you a lot. The west side of Baghdad, that is eventually goes to Anbar or goes to Saudis, is mostly Sunnis now and ruled by insurgents and by terrorists. So where's the logic here?
You know, we're almost at the point where we have to finish, and I wish we could keep talking. Let me ask you one last question, and I can't give you very much time to talk about it. But given the fact that it seems that there are many people in Iraq with strong ties to a religious sect, a political organization, a militia, their own family, their own group, those that they perceive their own people, it would seem that this would really work against people having the idea that what they are I am an Iraqi with this sense of identifying with the nation and the common good. That doesn't seem to be something that is there. And as long as it's focused the other way, then people are going to keep fighting for the supremacy of their own group, whatever that group is.
Well, Iraqis, they don't have strong ties to sects and militias and families as much as it's way of they're insecure. They feel insecure, and they needed the protection of somebody because the government is so weak. They can't protect their people. So this is why they have this. If people have either strong government or the American troops would get in and say, okay, enough is enough, no more militias, no more of this talk, no more weapons, pull out all the weapons, we are going to take the decisions, we are making the decisions until everything is fine, people will soon leave these militias, will fight against the militias. They don't want them. It's just because there is no other option for them. This is the way to keep them safe. But, and I tell you, I don't know, I believe there must be some English in one of the websites called Kitabat. And this website, there is a big, huge campaign called I Am Iraqi. And this campaign has been going for a while. And a huge gathering will, hopefully by December, will come from all over Iraq to celebrate I Am Iraqi, this notion. Not only that, there is an underground movement that has already started from good Iraqis who believe in secularism and democracy. They are still new, they're still weak, but we know the hope is there.
We are going to have to leave it there with, again, mention that for people who are here in and around Champaign-Urbana, if you'd like to hear more from our guests, she'll be taking part in a panel discussion about Iraqi Women's Radio. This is sponsored by College of Communications, the Department of Journalism, the Center for Global Studies, all here at the U of I Urbana-Champaign. This takes place tonight at 7 o'clock at the Levis Faculty Center on the third floor. It is free and open to the public. Anyone who would like to attend should feel welcome. Our guest, Bushra Jamil, one of the founders of Radio Al-Mahaba, Iraq's first independent women's radio station, sometime in the future, maybe on the web, so that people would actually be able to hear it.
Yeah, hopefully soon. And once the website is up and running, we will announce it on OKI website.
Okay, and that also would be another way to get information. You can go to the website of the organization Opportunities for Kids International, which is www.okiinc.org, and you can find out more that way. Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you.
I appreciate it.